Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this gorgeous Tuesday here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick and Chase McCabe with you. Elijah Campbell, man on the board, our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Don't forget to go to the game, Nashville.com, to check out Nashville's best deals. The deals happening right now include $50 Bad Axe Throwing, Nashville gift card for only $25. Buy one, get one free for Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon. This is the time of year for that. $20 Grain and Berry gift card for just $10. Get yours right now while supplies last. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com. So took in Vanderbilt, NC State. Took in a lot of sports last night. And thought, you know what? After that game, I need to check out what's going on with the Islanders and the Lightning.
Yo.
Any good movies on HBO? Wow.
It was a crime scene.
I mean, that is a good way of putting
Tampa.
It.
Tampa.
I was like, yikes. Holy
cow. And it was crazy seeing Tom Brady throw to Gronk for that touchdown and two-point conversion.
I know. But, I was, you know, they've got a good kicker. To go for two was amazing.
I guess, good call. I guess they thought suck up might slip on the ice, so they just decided to go for two.
The analytics, man. 2 points
better than
one.
Yeah, I guess so.
Here's the deal.
John Cooper was going two.
We talked about, by the way, that was a quite the spirited game in the third period, as you can imagine, with the score and a game out of hand like that. You do wonder what will be the carryover with all of that. As much as we talked about yesterday, wanting to see Barry and Shea Weber in the Stanley Cup final, we see this all the time, and you have to – be very, very careful when you go down this road, because we've seen it so many times in sports, not just in hockey. But a beatdown like that has you immediately going, oh, well, they're toast. Did anybody remember, and I know you do because you've been listening to the show and we've talked about it and I bring it up constantly, anybody remember game one of the Super Regional in Fayetteville?
That's
NC State lost
pretty
21,
recent example.
21 to 2. And they're going up against the number one seed in the country on the road. 21-2 in baseball. That is a crime scene in a super regional. And
well,
guess
about,
what? They came back and they won, and we know the rest is history. They're 2-0 in the College World Series.
Vanderbilt
don't know.
In 2019 before Kamar Rocker's no-hitter. They lost 18-5 to Duke in the first game.
Yep, that's
and
right.
And then they won the next two.
That's right.
So you can – it's one game. Right, it's the old cliche. It's one loss.
It is one game, but there is a but coming. As much as it's one game, and as much as I can start citing examples of don't get caught up in one game and say it's over, because teams rebound all the time from just getting mopped in a series, okay, in one game. But when you watch this Lightning team, and I know we watched it firsthand, right, up close and personal all year, 8 times against the Predators. And, well, watched a lot because they were in the Predators division. Where's their weakness? I mean, what they're just the most complete team. They really are. Vegas is good. Montreal's been a great story. The Islanders have been an unbelievable story. And both of those teams are deserving. But when you look at Tampa, they are just such a complete team. Like, by the way, Vasilevsky, good luck on the next game after a loss. Did you see what his response is every time after a loss? Like, not only do they win, he usually shuts you out.
Right.
He's a guy who responds.
That's my observation about Tampa. Now, again, we can get into this because it affected the Predators in 2015. The manipulation of the salary cap, that's a real thing that they did. And it's a legal way. As long as you don't go egregious with it, you can get away with it. They stashed Kucherov on the injured list with a huge salary cap number that didn't count against the cap, right? So that gave them an advantage.
That's long time IR, right?
That you can bring back. You can bring that guy back in the playoffs, and so there's a little bit of debate. But you know, every team would do it if they could, and you have to be good enough to do what they did during the season, and then you know, still make the playoffs. But most teams in the salary cap era are not flaw-free, right? That's what, really in any sport, especially in a hard cap like hockey, where if things go wrong, you can't do a whole lot about it. But they have no weaknesses, you pointed out, Darren. It's very rare that you have a juggernaut offensively that also has the best goalie, right? There's usually just not enough money to have all those guys, right? Especially for an extended period of time, which they've been able to pull off. Because they've been this dominant for probably at least 3 or 4 years now, right? And you can probably take it a little further back than that. True?
So, right. But let me say this. If your team got beat like the Islanders got beat last night, and you know you got to bounce back, you're facing elimination, isn't Barry Trotz the coach you would want to have to try and to rally the troops?
Well, he's been through all these situations before, for sure. So, I love that team playing in that building, right, where every game could be the last game in the Nassau Coliseum because they're going to move into their new building next year. I just think they're going to be ready to go. Now, Tampa's good enough to win. Like you said, Darren, it takes everything you have to contain them because they have so many ways of beating you. But I don't think it's going to be 8-0. I think it'll be another game that we've seen throughout the series, tight all the way to the end.
In Vegas, somebody's going to take a 3-2 lead tonight in Vegas. So,
and you go from the sort of quiet 3,500 to the raucous, crazy, louder than loud, full throttle of Vegas.
Yep.
That's another thing Montreal deserves credit for is, you know, they haven't had that. You know, none of the Canadian teams have had that throughout the playoffs, and bouncing back between these atmospheres or lack of is quite the storyline for these playoffs.
So let's shift this now to the Predators, as we'll see how all this plays out. I wanted to bring it because I thought, man, oh man, I mean the Lightning, they're just so good. Remember the players poll? I mean, Victor Hedman was by far the runaway best defenseman. By far. So, and then you've got the best goalie, and you've got Kucherov, and you've got, oh, by the way, Braden Point, who's good for a point at least every game. Actually, his name should be Braden Points because of the way he's played in the playoffs. But they're just so, so good. But anyway, we'll see how all that plays out Wednesday night. We'll see if the Islanders can stave off elimination. Let's talk about things on the Predators' end. So they've got a lot at hand as everybody's trying to figure out what David Poile is going to do this offseason. A lot of big decisions have to be made. So I'm going to ask you a very difficult, and it's hard to narrow it down to one, but I'm asking you to give me, what do you think is number one thing on David Poile's list? If he's got to have, if everything's got to be numbered in order of importance, what is number one on his list of things this offseason? What does he have to address first? Who would like to start?
I think it's pretty simple. I think UC Saros.
You think it's pretty simple?
I think signing UC Saros to the right contract is the first priority.
Really?
Yeah. If you don't have a goalie.
He's
an RFA. Like, really? That's the number one thing of importance is getting an RFA sign?
Let him finish.
Okay.
That's fine.
I'm surprised by that. Okay.
Well, it's not that he's going to be back. UC Saros is going to be the goalie. But the question is, how many years? How much money? Because that dictates your budget. We just got done talking about it. It's very hard to have a highly paid goalie, and enough resources to fill out the rest of your roster where you have a really powerful roster, especially if you've got some guys making a lot of money that aren't producing a lot, which is the handicap that you have going in. It's their own fault, right? It hadn't worked out. They have two $8 million centers that aren't playing like top centers. That is the weight on the entire payroll right now. Can't get around it. It's nothing personal against those guys, but they're making a lot of money and they're not producing a lot of results. So you got to sign UC Saros to the right contract. Can you get him for $4 million? Is it more like $5 million? I think you'd have a wide range of people, you know, a wide range of guesses on what his next contract is going to be. Is it going to be a 2-year deal, 4-year deal, 6 or 7 year investment? Once upon a time, when Pecorine was even older than UC Saros is now, he signed a 7-year, $7 million contract. 7 for 7. But I think at that point, he had been doing it for, I want to say, at least 3 years of being a dominant first-rate goalie. And he became one of the higher-paid goalies in the league. And Saros isn't that. He's between that, right? He's a Vezina-caliber guy for 1 year. He's only been a starter for 1 year.
For half a year.
He's only 26. Not a half a year. It's not a full year either. It's 56 games.
But half of that 56 game season, he was lights out. But I'm not going to say he was at the first part. I mean, he was hurt.
But his numbers at the end of the year were Vezina level, even with the slow start.
Right. But you got to factor in the slow. They're going to factor in the slow start.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be a difficult negotiation, I think.
Okay. I mean, that's certainly not it's not what I thought. I mean, an RFA, I can't imagine that's number one on David Poyle's list. But, okay, look, there's no wrong answers.
I get it's an important position.
Yeah, what's your budget? What's your budget
Okay, hang on. So let me
– But we know it's not going to be 7 years because, you've drafted a first-round goalie, so it's not going to be 7 years. And we know it's not going to be a long term. It's going to be somewhere between 2 and 4 years. I mean – that's what I believe. That's what I think he'll sign. But somewhere between 2 and 4 years, just depending on the money.
Yep. So here's mine. I think the number one priority is figuring out how to move money, whether it's like we've talked about with the expansion draft of working a deal with Seattle to take a big contract, whether it's Duchesne, Johansson, those would be the top two. Maybe Ellis is in that conversation. But figuring out a way to move some of these heavy contracts, which is not going to be easy by any means, so you can make room to figure out what's next. Are you going to re-sign Forsberg? Are you going to re-sign Ekholm? You know, you're going to be able to do that.
Well, he said one thing. You're listening to like seven things. Okay, so let's narrow it down. No, but
it all ties together.
Okay,
so I'm saying
but when you say some contracts.
Well, I mean.
I think you'd be lucky to move one of the big, contracts.
And that's what I mean. So move one of the big contracts.
Okay. I think that's a fair.
Well, get
answer.
Specific. I mean,
well,
it's
I think
a pretty broad
you might
brush.
Have to give yourself a few options to move one.
Mine, but
I'm asking you guys.
So if I'm David Poyle, I am moving Matt Duchesne.
Okay.
I am getting rid of that contract.
This is via expansion draft?
Any way I can.
Okay. Do you think that is the best? That's the best way for that to happen?
I think the expansion draft is the best way, but you're going to have to give up. You're going to have to give up something.
Okay, so what are you willing to give up? Okay, one player. One player that is either in the starting lineup or is in the pipeline and has had some spot starts, what have you. What one player are you willing to give up realistically? I mean, don't throw out, you know, something silly. It's like, well, yeah. Come on. Okay.
I think they'd be more inclined to want, you know, a prospect or a young player.
Mm-hmm.
I would give them Fabbro.
You would?
Yep. I would not.
Yep.
This is an interesting bit. I've had some people bring that up. Would you rather give up somebody like Fabbro or somebody or like a first round pick? To me, I would rather give up a first round pick than Fabbro. I'm holding on to
Fabbro. Okay, why?
Fabbro is a developed prospect that has not yet reached his potential, but you have a pretty good idea of what he is. A first-round pick, which in theory would be, where do they pick this year? 15th, 17th, somewhere?
Middle of the pack.
Yep.
Middle of the pack first round. I just think there's a lot less chance that guy becomes as good as Fabbro.
What's his ceiling, in your opinion?
I think Fabbro is a top four defenseman.
Okay, top two or top four?
I think
there's a difference. First D pairing or second D pairing?
I'm going to say second D pairing.
Yep.
Realistically, I think there's a outside shot that he could be first, but I just go back to this when Ryan Ellis was 21 or 22 or Matthias Ekholm were 21 and 22. Josi always kind of had that hey, this guy's going to be special label. Ekholm and Ellis were a little bit more of, I don't know, you know? And then, boom.
See, I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was more Ellis, and then Yossi was like, no, hey, he's good. He's
No. You know, when you talk to people, I used to get people tell me, like, that literally would stop me and be like, let me just tell you, this Roman Yossi kid, you better watch him. You better put him on your radar. I'm just telling you, this kid is different than everybody else. This was years and years and years ago. So, no, I had those conversations. Willie's absolutely right. There was no doubt. If you were talking to the right people, they were telling you, you better be putting this Yossi kid on your radar because this kid's different.
Now, well, I don't know when you watch Fabro that you say, this kid's different, right? You don't,
I will
he
just
doesn't
tell
have
you
this. You know, physical talent, this unbelievable shot or unbelievable speed. You know, he's not like that, but he's good at everything. I just think it for him, it's a little bit more the reps. It's a little more mental, just getting over the hump. He didn't get any minor league seasoning that all these other guys like Dan Hambuch and Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, all those guys got some reps. Carrier is a great example. He got tons of reps.
But here's
I will say this to you, Willie. I've had no one, and I mean no one, that I have specifically asked about him that have better eyes than me and would certainly know better than me. The same people that told me Yossi was special a long, long, long time ago. I've not had one person tell me they believe Fabro is special.
Well, that's why
I've not had one
four.
Person tell me. No, they think he is honestly his ceiling at best. This is what I've been told. We root for him. We like him. Yeah. We've been talking to him since he was in college.
I've been standing next to you in some of these conversations.
Yes, and I've been told his ceiling at best would be second D pairing, and that is if things really take off for him, that he is a third D pairing guy.
And
that's what he is. And these
well,
are
if that's
people,
how they evaluate him, then they absolutely should shop him around.
That's what I'm getting at.
I don't think they see him.
Well, I mean, how – Do you know? I mean, I don't know that. I don't know what they think of Dante Fabro. I know that, you know what, they were playing in some pretty important games, and he wasn't in there.
Right. But
so
what would you have said?
Clearly, there's hesitation.
I get pause for concern.
It.
But my comeback to you is, what did you think of Alex Carrier 2 years ago? Alex Carrier is 2 years older. Alex Carrier is 2 years older than Fabro.
I wasn't even talking to anybody about Carrier, so I don't know.
Well, that ought to tell you something.
I know, but the difference is I am talking to people about Fabro, people that have watched him because he's logged over 100 NHL games, and I'm telling you, the people that have told me and the people that have better eyes, hockey eyes than me, say, I mean, I like him, but he's like a third D pairing guy. So the reason I bring that up is because when you say no, you wouldn't shop him. If you need to move a contract, and if they've evaluated in their room the same thing, wouldn't that be open for discussion?
I'm pretty sure that that's not how they have him evaluated.
Okay.
And let me again go back to another example. I just told you, Carrier 2 years ago, you would have said, no way, man. Top four defenseman? Not seeing it. Matthias Ekholm, remember, started the season, and I want to say it was the 2011-2012 season. If I've got that right.
Trotsky told him to get a dog.
Yeah, if you're scared, get a dog. He went back home to Sweden.
Yeah.
What did you think he was back then? Right? Yeah, guys mature at different levels. They go different ways. It's not easy to project, but I feel like they're – and, of course, it does, when you're a first-round pick, they're going to give you a little extra time. He did not have a good season this year, Fabro, but there were some reasons for that.
Well, the problem that I have with your evaluations is you want everything to be concrete and set in stone. You're like, it's tricky. Well, yeah, that's the whole part of trading. Like, once you know everything, then by the way, either you're keeping them or you can't get rid of them. It's like once you – everybody has got a concrete definition of what that person is, because you're always like, yeah, but there's time to grow into that, and they're not there yet, and this is tricky. He's still very young. Yes, all true statements. But once you have defined, once it's concrete, they are really good, or I got lots of question marks, then you're in a no man's land. You're out there in that gray area going, yeah, can you take – Everybody's looking at this person going, I'm not real sure. I don't really think he's that much. I'd really have any interest in him. Or if he's really good and he blossoms and he takes off, well, guess what? Now you're not trading him. So that's the whole point. Like, you can't wait until you have a defined answer one way or the other.
I'm telling you, I'm holding on to Fabro, and you can I would rather package my first round pick, or hopefully I didn't have to do that, but maybe a couple of seconds, something like that, to move a big contract. I do think that somewhere in here, in this equation, I agree with Chase's assessment. There's got to be some money freed up to get yourself a little more flexibility.
What about a guy like Rem Pitlick?
I'd be willing to move him at this stage.
Do you think Seattle would have any interest?
But that's what I don't know. Seattle could have a wide range of opinions on him. I think prospects like him, you're going to get a mixed bag of, you know, one scout might say, yeah, I really like this guy. This guy could be really good. And then another scout's like, nah, I'm not seeing it. Too small.
I think it's going to take more. It's going to take more.
Well, and, you know, defenseman, I just, of his, because of the things you just said, Willie, I mean, he's still young. He's still developing. I think that may have a little more cachet for Seattle, but I say that because this team knows how to pick defensemen. And so, yes, it's going to hurt. And moving $8 million, moving a contract like Matt Duchesne's is going to hurt. You're going to have to eat something, and it's not going to taste good. But if that means that you unload that, Fabro, okay, he's gone, but you have Ferentz that you're still evaluating. He's very, very young.
Yep.
Davies, we'll see.
He needs to make a jump.
He's got to make a big jump.
Remember, he's a little
24?
Older.
Yeah, he's 24.
Older.
So the jump better happen real soon.
Okay, but Carrier took the jump, so it does happen. And Carrier has obviously changed the way of thinking because Carrier was supposed to fill a spot, and he took two jumps, in my opinion. So I think that and Pitlick could be one that that's all it took, then okay. But
Pitlick is a really interesting one because he would not be on a high prospect radar if you did it like a league wide. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that's sneaky, right? If you look at his production in Milwaukee or at the AHL, I get this year of Chicago, right? Last year was Milwaukee, but he's put together two really good seasons at the AHL at a pretty young age, and I don't know if would you say he's flashed at the NHL level?
No,
I don't know if
no,
I would say
no.
that.
I'm
right?
bringing him up because I don't know where he is. I mean, I
he's
don't
a,
know what
he's
he is
a mid level.
Right
he's a mid level prospect. There are players like him that make jumps. Yeah, but and there, some of those guys turn into really good players, and some guys just never can get it done at the big level, right? I think you would say that about some baseball players. There are some guys, hey, 4A guy for a while, and then boom, makes a jump, and you're like, why didn't this guy come up earlier?
Yeah,
and then there's other guys that are 4A forever,
and
they never
forever.
Get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They
mean,
just never get in there.
I think you would have said that about
Skeeter
Carrier.
Barnes.
Skeeter. Yeah, great example.
But, I mean, you know, if they looked at Pitlick and said, you know what, yeah, I think there's something there, we'll take him, and then he plays every day in the NHL, then, you know, who knows?
All right. Let's take another example. Victor Arvidsson. He wasn't even drafted the first year he was eligible to get drafted. I don't think he was even picked the second year he was eligible. He wasn't a high pick. He was in the minor leagues. There was no hype about, hey, wait, where do they bring up Victor Arvidsson, man? This guy's going to light it up. He's going to have 30-goal seasons. He would never have said that. He was a little bit like Rem Pitlick, right? Mid-range prospect. Hey, he's doing a nice job. And then all of a sudden, the lights come on. And he scores 30 goals in the league, and he's got his contract. So there, and for every Victor Arvidsson, there's probably like five other guys that
never make it.
That never make it.
Yeah.
So that's why this is a really tough thing. But who does Seattle like? That's the key. Who are you willing to give up that Seattle likes and has value for them to take a big contract? Because I think regardless of where you go, somewhere in here.
I told you what I would do.
You've got to give up a big contract.
I'm with you. I think it's got to be a number one. It just does because it's going to have to. It then dictates other things, right?
Yep.
Like that layer then dictates a lot of other layers. I just think that's probably number one, and I don't know how. That's David Poyle's. That's in his lap. That's why he gets paid the big bucks, and that's why he's a Hall of Famer. But that is where I would go. Like they have to figure out a way to free up some stuff. Look, we've talked about this before. If there's a certain group that has remained the same and the results are not changing, at some point, like you can't keep chipping around the edges. You've changed everything else. You've chipped around the edges with players and coaches.
You got to swing the hammer.
You got it right. At some point, you got to start knocking in there. Okay, so something's got to change if you want different results. So it is interesting. We'll get into this a little bit later because I think Rocco Grimaldi is another one that you do wonder, what is his future here? What is his future with John Hines as the coach? He's another one we could bat around, but I don't know what he is out on the open market, right? Is he a carrot that interests anybody? We'll come back. We'll head to Omaha. We'll talk to the voice of the Vols, John Wilkerson. They have their game in about an hour and a half against Texas. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, here on this Tuesday, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you, coming up in about an hour and a half, a little bit less. First pitch, hard to believe, an elimination game between the 2 overall seed and the 3 overall seed. The battle of the UTs, Tennessee and Texas, and joining us from Omaha, the voice of the Vols, John Wilkerson, is on the line with us. John, how's set the scene for us? How has it been thus far out in Omaha?
Well, as you said, you don't want to be in the first elimination game, but that's where you find yourself if you're Tennessee, and it's really interesting because it's the same setup in terms of the SEC tournament. It was the 2-seed Tennessee taking on the 3-seed Mississippi State. Tennessee came out and punched the Bulldogs in the mouth, able to stay in play and eventually win their bracket. It's, I think, a little bit of a taller order today, even though it's State that beat Texas to put the Longhorns here. Texas, the number 2 seed, Tennessee, the 3 seed, and it's just been a wild tournament because you take the top half of the field, the 4 favorites, number 4 is gone, and the other 3 each have a loss now. So it has been it's been the day of the underdogs thus far in Omaha.
Now, that's a good way of putting it. Isn't it crazy, the stat that they put up there, that this is the first time the 2 and the 3 seed have ever played after in game 2 in an elimination setting? Like, that's never happened before. That is hard to believe.
It is. And when you take a look at the pedigree that is Texas baseball, they've been here more than any other program in terms of College World Series appearances. And to just have, again, the 2 favored teams both lose and in different fashion. Tennessee lost 6-0 to Virginia. Texas was down 2-1 with an outstanding pitching performance by Mississippi State. You just didn't expect these two teams to be in this position. But again, credit the Bulldogs and the Cavaliers. It's also been crazy in terms of the ACC being 2-0 against the SEC and outscoring their opponents 7-0 in those 2 games.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you do wonder, so what's going to give? Tennessee gets shut out after their bats were alive in the Super Regional in Knoxville, or Texas that had 21 strikeouts against Mississippi State, both facing elimination. Tony Vitello, I know, touched on it, John, after their 6-0 loss to Virginia. How do you think the Vols respond today?
Tennessee's done such a great job responding all season long, and that's what I expect to see. They are going to, I think, fight to their last strike, and they are the road team in this game. Since both teams were the home team, it went to a coin toss. And the coin toss went to UT Junior, so Texas will be the home team. And then I do think that the Volunteers, they've got the pitcher that you want on the mound in freshman Blade Tidwell. He worked the third game of all 10 SEC series, and Tennessee 7 times went into that game with the series on the line, and he won 5 of them, with the only losses being 2, at the time, number 2 Vanderbilt and top-ranked Arkansas. So I think you've seen a young man really grow into this spot, and I think that he's somebody who can't wait to help his teammates fight to the bitter end.
John, you've been doing radio in the Knoxville market for a long time. You've been around this baseball program for a long time. What does it say? And could you see this build happening? This is, what, year 4 for Tony Vitello? It's been a while since Tennessee's had any success at baseball, since Rod Delmonico. Could you see this coming? Did you know right away, or was this kind of a slow build? And then maybe last year And this year you're like, holy cow, like Vitello's taken them to places we haven't seen in a long, long time.
I think you actually got a glimpse early on because Tennessee, when Tony Vitello takes over the program, had won 7 conference games the year before, and they win 12 his first year. I mean, totally unexpected because they were picked to be perhaps 7 or worse in regards to the number of conference wins, but there they were going to Columbia, Missouri. If you win the series, you go to the SEC tournament. So you exceed expectations. You win 12 that first year, and then the next year, you kick down the door and you end what was then a 14-year drought of getting to the NCAA tournament. You win 14 conference games, and you're on your way to Chapel Hill where you make the regional final. You lose to the Tar Heels, but you had taken a significant step forward. And that's something that Vitello spoke of from the moment he put on that orange blazer and was introduced as the coach. He wasn't looking about step forward. He was talking about NCAA tournament year one. They finished with a winning record, 2 games over 500 that year. The next year they won 40 games. And they won their first 14 in year 3, which turned out to be the COVID year that everything was shut down. They had won their first 14, did drop their last series, but they were getting ready to go play at South Carolina, and that's when everything got shut down. But you had 3 players that were drafted in the 5 rounds of last summer's MLB draft. So you had Garrett Crochet in the first round, Alaric Solari, and Zach Daniels, 2 outstanding outfielders that were also a part of those that were selected. So I think Tennessee, if everything had played out, could very well have at least approached making it here last year, but we'll never know. And then this year, Tennessee picked 3rd in the East behind preseason number 1 Florida and the reigning College World Series champs in Vanderbilt, and Tennessee wins 20 SEC games and claims the first Eastern Division title since 1997. So it has been a steady climb, and the way that it's been done is developing the players and giving them the sense that they have the confidence in their own abilities and the belief that they can get the job done, and that's exactly what's happening.
John, I'm curious your thoughts on the Texas matchup today. You just talked about the rich history that the Longhorns had. We can think back to the days of Roger Clemens and Greg Swindell and some of the guys in the 80s when the ESPN first started covering the College World Series. It goes way, way back with that. But what about this team? I know, you know, the 21 strikeouts has got to be the first thing on their mind. You have to think at the plate, those hitters are going to be, you know, shorten up the swings, trying to put the ball in play. I wonder how Tennessee can take advantage of that.
Well, I do think that, I mean, that's one of the things, again, that you've seen Blade Tidwell really develop in terms of his ability to pitch, to work in and rely on as much on his breaking stuff as a fastball that in Hoover hit 99 on the gun. So I think he's going to try and mix it up. And while he did give up 6 runs in the Super Regional in the deciding game, the winning game against LSU, I think that was more a byproduct of just filling up the zone with strikes because you had such a big lead. So I think he's going to work the corners, and he's going to do his very best to keep them off balance. But with Texas, you see a lot of what you saw against Virginia, and that is they rely on their pitching to lead the way. Their team ERA is a quarter run better than any other program in the NCAA. It was more than a run better than number 2 in the Big 12, and they also are very sound defensively, less than 50 errors on the season. So Tennessee is going to have to find holes in the Longhorn defense, just as they struggled to do so against Virginia. But I do think that, again, Tennessee, as Coach Vitello talked about, they put Sunday behind them. They had a good lift yesterday, which he thought was just something that got them back into routine, having a few laughs as they have all season long as a squad. And for that reason, I think they want to play to stay longer in Omaha and, as Coach V talked about, show the crowd what Tennessee baseball is and what Tennessee baseball is all about.
John, any feel right now? I know you still got a little ways. It could probably change as quick as it can change out there with, you know, storms rolling through or whatever. But what's the weather conditions today? Do you have any feel for the wind condition or how the ball might carry today?
Yeah, right now it's blowing out to left, but it changes in a heartbeat, which is amazing. We saw 19 runs scored in the elimination game yesterday between Stanford and Arizona as the Cardinal eliminated the Wildcats. Then you got a run in the night game. But right now the wind looks to be blowing out to left. It's going to be in the low to mid-teens for the better part of the afternoon. There is a chance of rain, a spotty shower, about 15% or so after first pitch. It increases when you get to about 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon here. So I think it might be more of an impact on the night game between Mississippi State and Virginia as opposed to Tennessee and Texas. And I just hope I didn't jinx the heck out of us with that.
John, real quick, we were talking to Vince yesterday. Tennessee did not tax their bullpen too much in the first game. Nobody pitched more than about an inning or so. Do you think everybody's available out of the bullpen today?
I do. In fact, Coach Vitello spoke specifically to that with the day break between games, Sunday and Tuesday. I mean, nobody worked more than what would have been looked at as a bullpen anyhow. So I do think that he will have the approach today that he has in just about every game, and that is you try to go 1-0 today. So if for some reason he thinks that there's a moment where it's Will Heflin, who would be the projected Game 3 starter, he won't be afraid to go to him. But you do have Sean Hundley, who has done such a great job. The Mount Juliet native has been so outstanding for Tennessee this year, earning All-American status. You've also got Redmond Walsh, Camden Sewell. You've got the guys that Tennessee's relied on. Everybody's going to be all hands on deck if need be. But I also expect Blake Tidwell to lead that charge when he gets the ball to start.
We're talking to John Wilkerson of the Vol Network, the voice of the Vols, and as Tennessee will continue their College World Series adventure today. So something that we talked about, John, was, you know, obviously they didn't score any runs against Virginia in Game 1, but how have they tried to adjust to the park there in Omaha and how, you know, it's not a hitter-friendly park. There are differences after playing the entire regional and super regional at Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of similarities to the Hoover Met because it can play really large as well. But while Tennessee has the second most home runs it's ever hit in a season and the Volunteers are number two in the SEC in the long ball, Tennessee leads the Southeastern Conference in doubles. So you've got more than 130 doubles. So this is a team that's very comfortable and has shown an ability to find the gaps as well as just load the bases, whether it be walks drawn, which they're number two in the conference in, or just to work a base hit past the infield. So I do think Tennessee is as comfortable if the ball doesn't leave the yard as when it does for the two or three run home run. But it's more about what it was the other day that you weren't able to make it the most of, and that is getting guys on and then getting that big hit. I'll be surprised if Tennessee doesn't have a much better day offensively today, even though the numbers against Texas or the numbers by Texas are stronger than it was against Virginia.
How much of that would you credit to Vitello's ability to, you know, and he was very honest about his team after the loss, but how he's able, what you've seen in the past of him being able to rally the troops, so to speak, of be like, all right, you know, it wasn't our day, we didn't play our best, these are the things we need to work on, but how has he been able to, I guess, do that in times that you've seen them have a bad game and then turn around and try and have a good one?
Well, a lot of it he credits to the players themselves because we were approaching the tail end of the season, and I said, so at this stage of the year, is your team stronger offensively, defensively, or on the mound, or is it an intangible? And he said what he likes most about this team is its grit and determination. And he says if you can have that as your reputation, then you're on the right track because that in itself is just an outstanding compliment to each guy in the lineup. So I do think this, and he said today, if we don't see that this is a determined bunch, then we're going to pull it out of them. So I do think while he's not one for the rah-rah speech, he is somebody that is very pointed with his comments that he chooses to make with his team before they head out on the field. But I also think this is such a veteran team. I mean, you've got a group of four guys that have been a part of this roster for 5 years. They were on the team that won just the seven conference games the year before Tony Vitello took over. And then you look at their first class that is now juniors, that they have really done a great job of just growing, like Max Ferguson at second or Jake Rucker at third, Connor Pavloni behind the plate. And then you have a couple of youngsters, Drew Gilbert in center, Jordan Beck in right, that have come in behind. So I just think that with the experience this team has, that you don't have to stoke that flame because they do a really good job of doing that themselves.
Well, it's gonna be fun to watch, and we'll be paying attention. John, appreciate the time, and we'll do it again soon.
Sure do appreciate the invitation, guys, and it should be a lot of fun. Any season that ends in Omaha has been an outstanding year. This is just the third team with 50 wins, and here's hoping number 51 comes this afternoon.
Absolutely. Here's John Wilkerson, the voice of the Vols, as Just a little over an hour, they will get things underway there in Omaha. We'll have much more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Good stuff from John Wilkerson from Omaha. A little bit more than an hour away, Tennessee and Texas will do battle. Don't forget, Nashville SC fans, you can join 94.9 Monday nights, 7 to 8, NSC backstage. They had their first installment of it last night with the captain, Max McCarty, Nashville SC players and coaches, Monday special guest. The next show will be head coach Gary Smith. So you can watch it online via 102.5's, our games, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage, brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. As I mentioned, Tennessee and Texas in an elimination game today coming up at 1 o'clock our time. And then in the nightcap tonight, it'll be Mississippi State and Virginia. One of those two teams is going 2-0 to start off the College World Series, just like NC State is. So we'll see. Can it be another ACC school, or will it be the first SEC school to start off 2-0. Mississippi State has looked really good, although Virginia looked good against Tennessee, but I like Mississippi State. I like the way they're playing right now, but we shall see. And then if you'd have told me between Tennessee and Texas, one of them's going home and not winning a game, I would have been a little bit surprised by that, but that is the case. A
lot of good arms on Mississippi State, but I am curious if they get into a close tie game or save situation, will they come back with Landon Sims, who threw three innings to close out the 2-1 gem that they had against Texas?
Yep.
One day's rest, you know, maybe for an inning? I don't know. It depends on how he recovers, how does he feel after the one day off, but that's a tricky one. They're a really good team. They could win the whole thing, no question. Big, big game tonight.
I have found myself, and I realize it's, you know, two teams in our state. It's a team in our market. I get it. The intrigue is there because it's Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So I'll just say that on the front end, and it kind of falls into the duh category. But I have really been glued to the College World Series. I have watched a lot of college baseball, and I've really enjoyed it. It's been really good, and I'll continue watching even tonight when it's not a Vanderbilt or a Tennessee. I'll watch the Tennessee-Texas game this afternoon, obviously, but you know, I just have found myself really intrigued. Now, if Tennessee and Vanderbilt are out, then it'll put me to the test. Will I still have interest in the College World Series? I hope I don't have to find that out. I hope I don't have to answer that question, because I hope both of them, you know, or at least one of them finds a way to you know, get there at the end. But
I still want both. I think it'd be great now that they're both in the loser's bracket to battle out of that and still meet. Like, that'd make it even more intriguing. But I know that's obviously a tall task.
I would say you would get pretty big odds on that happening right now. On the
sure, those odds are out there somewhere.
On DraftKings and BetMG. Bet you could get some really, really big odds. It's just so hard. I mean, what was it they said? What was the stat last night? 25 out of the last 30 national champions have gone 2-0.
Yeah.
You know, that's how big that game was.
It's the best path to go, of course, but you have to try to battle that. If it's like John said, you don't want to be in the situation, but hey, you're in there. So you have to get that mindset. We are going to take one game at a time, and we are going to win four in a row, or in Vanderbilt's case, three in a row. But you can't do anything until you win your next game. So, what is Stanford? I don't know a whole lot about Stanford. They were impressive yesterday. They opened up the game very early. Then Arizona came back and made it a game. Stanford came right back and took control. And one going away. They probably didn't have to use a whole lot of pitching in that game to close it out. That's the advantage that they will have over Vanderbilt. They'll probably have a pretty fresh bullpen. But these are the things you start getting to. Who's your number three starter? How good is he compared to the other two guys? You know, how's How is he pitching lately, right? It's not just what have you done all year, but have you pitched the last few times out? How do you match up with the other? There's a lot of things that can affect, you know, how you are equipped to go through the loser's bracket if you're Vanderbilt or Tennessee.
Well, I have odds. I just pulled some odds up.
Do you?
And I'm actually looking on your sports book there, Darren.
Okay.
So right now, who would you guess is the favorite? To win
right
it all.
Now,
to win it all.
Who is
to win
the
it all.
Favorite? Boy, that's...
Plus 200.
NC State is the only 2-0 team right now. Is that right?
Yeah. Correct. So I'm just going to play the math game, and I'll say it's got to be NC State.
Yeah, just because they're 2-0.
You'd be correct. They are plus 200 to win it all.
Just because they're in a position nobody else is in right now.
Plus 275 is the next one.
Mississippi State.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Then you have plus 425 for a team, plus 450 for a team.
I'm going to say
Virginia.
Virginia.
Yep.
As a 1-0 team. It's just, again, the math game. So the question is, what are the odds for the teams that have a loss? How do they stack up?
Vanderbilt's plus 450. And then Texas and Tennessee are both plus 1,000. Stanford's plus 1,100 to win it all.
All right. Then they will change again tomorrow.
Yes, they will.
Drastically, because the winner of Mississippi State, Virginia, their odds are going to shoot up.
What were NC State's odds after they lost 21-2
of
winning the next two games? It just shows you. It's just that's why we love sports. Is these things? It's only what they are. What they are. It doesn't mean that you can't do it.
Well, I'll give you some odds. They were a 3.5 run underdog in game two to Arkansas.
Okay.
You do not see 3.5 runs.
That's a high. Yeah.
That is very high in a super regional facing elimination. 3.5. That was the over-under. I mean, that was the line. Arkansas favored by 3.5 runs, and you rarely ever see that. That just tells you what they were, and, of course, NC State won the game, as we know.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out let's try to – and Chase, pull up the schedule if you can and cross-check me on this. So Vanderbilt plays Stanford tomorrow. Then they would have a day off, or they would come right back and play Thursday.
Who?
Vanderbilt?
No, Friday.
Friday. So you would get another. You would get another day off, right?
And they would play NC State, right?
Yeah,
it's Wednesday and then Friday.
Okay, so they play tomorrow. Have to win. Day off. So then Friday, you have to win Friday and Saturday, correct? Against NC State, in theory. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so let's do the pitching chart, right? So you could bring Kamar Rocker back on Saturday with pretty much full rest for his second start, right? So you would need a good start from Patrick Riley or Christian Little today, and then a good start from the other one on Friday. And by tomorrow, they'll have the full complement of their relief pitchers ready to go, right? Thanks to Leiter going the full 8 innings. They didn't have to use anybody else, so they'll have fresh arms. And I don't think either one of Little or Riley will have a chance to have a complete game. If you got 5 or 6 innings out of those guys, I think you'd be really happy with that. So that's how it plays out. You would have Rocker with his regular rest on Saturday night, if you could get to that game. Of course, NC State will be sitting back. They'll have, in theory, their number 3 starter on Friday, and then their number 1 on Saturday.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. Hour number 3. We're going to get back into the Predators discussion to kick off the third hour. That's next on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.